Hello everybody, welcome back to Transmission. It's me, Quentin, and this week we've got Blake Rector, Director of Markets and Optimization at Powin. Now, Powin are an American manufacturer of battery energy storage systems, and they've got quite some scale. So 17 gigawatt hours of assets are online or under construction. And Blake has been with the company pretty much since the beginning. Now, in this conversation, we go really deep down the rabbit hole of a hot topic in our space, which is state of charge, and especially how we measure it and how we maybe make some errors. And I think if you are an asset owner or you're related to batteries, this is a really important conversation, even though it goes into some great technical detail. So I hope you like this conversation. I certainly enjoyed it. If you did, hit like, subscribe, and all those good buttons. It means that we can have bigger impact and reach more people with our content. Let's jump in. Hello, Blake. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Q. It's an honor to be here.
An honor. Thank you for saying that. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about one of those hot potato topics in energy storage that we really need to go down a rabbit hole to figure out. So if you're listening to this, this is an episode all about state of charge and how it impacts financial performance. Before we get started with that, can you just talk about your business, Powin? What does the company do if our audience haven't heard about it? And what do you do there?
So Powin is a utility scale integrator. So we deliver the turnkey battery energy storage systems. We work really in large scale projects these days. 17 gigawatt hours deployed or under construction, over 700 employees globally. And we have projects in 10 different countries. Within North America, we have projects mainly in CAISO, in non-CAISO WEC and ERCOT, but then also projects in MISO, New York ISO, ISO New England, and PJM. My title is Principal of Markets and Optimization. I've been with the company since the very early days. I'm a mathematician by training, so sort of came on to do market operations and bidding optimization for our very first systems that Powin actually owned in the very beginning. Now we strictly sell them. Since then, my role has evolved and done lots of different things for the company, but now primarily work with the data analytics team and the product management teams. And one of the things that I've been focused on for the last couple of years is our state of charge estimation. And then more recently, some research around the financial impacts of state of charge accuracy.
Okay, and we're going to get into that. It's a very juicy topic. But seeing as you've been with Powin for so long, since the early days, and it's been on one hell of a journey, could you just give us a quick story of the company?
Sure. Powin, originally called Powin Energy, started as a parallel company to Powin Manufacturing. Powin Manufacturing had been around for around 30 years, but then Powin Energy started first as an R&D company around 2010, maybe 2012, and then became a utility scale BESS provider with our first project in 2016. This was, for those that remember, that Aliso Canyon solicitation through Southern California Edison. There were three projects that were awarded and then commissioned in about under 6 months to deal with the concerns over the gas leak at the Aliso Canyon storage facility in the LA basin. We were doing it all with a pretty small team back then. I feel like Powin's sort of always been a company, especially in the early days, that punched above its weight, so to speak, that we've just done things with a lot of sort of grit and tenacity and heart. So very early days, company was around 15 people when I started. By 2000, I think we had grown to a little over 80. And then today, just sort of several different chapters in terms of our growth and maturity as a company. But yeah, today to be over 700 people, it just means that a lot of battles have had to have been won along the way. And it's been really impressive to see everyone work together to get to where we are today.
And so Powin, I mean, the numbers are quite staggering, right? So this is a lot of deployment of battery energy storage around the world. Where are the batteries manufactured?
So now we have a fully sophisticated and dedicated integrated supply chain team. And I think the name of the game these days is flexibility. But we do have our batteries being manufactured all over the world, some in North America, some in China, other in other parts of Southeast Asia. I'm sure the supply chain team would love to come on and give you a full rundown of everything there, but it really is a globally diverse manufacturing paradigm at this point.
So we've got to talk about your platform and what you're involved in the firm. So bidding strategies and optimization. Can you just talk about StackOS? What is StackOS? And then we'll talk about market access and all of the other things around state of charge that we need to be thinking about.
So one of the key features of Powen, and it has been sort of since the beginning, is that we write all of the software at every layer of the system. So we write our own BMS. We write what we call the EMS, which essentially manages all the power distribution at the site level, and including the TMS, or the thermal management system, all the way up to the cloud UI that customers use to see their systems. So this is all written by Powen, and it's all considered StackOS. We do not provide market optimization as a service. That's actually sort of a unique and maybe even in some ways interesting point about us, and that frees us up to help our customers with their optimizations. We do have, though, that we don't talk about a lot, but we do have an in-house behind the meter optimization program. I call it a direct dispatch optimization. And so this runs in the cloud and is capable of dispatching batteries directly through first decisions that get made in the cloud and then get passed down and executed in real time with additional logic on site. So we sort of consider everything there to be StackOS, and consider that to be one of the main selling points of Powen, is that all of the software is cohesive.
So I didn't realize that Powen didn't do optimization services. I knew you did behind the meter, and I thought you also did in front of the meter. Well, that puts us in a very interesting position now, because you, of course, have to help customers in choosing optimizers and working with optimizers, and assumptions around their asset in the market and bidding strategies. But you don't actually take the keys to the asset, which gives you a very unique view on things. So we're going to talk all about state of charge in a minute. But before we do, let's just set the scene. So asset owner comes to you and says, look, I need to think about my bidding strategy in these markets. I need to be putting something in my business case. I'm perhaps choosing an optimizer. Yeah. What challenges do I have as an asset owner when I'm thinking about that? And how do you help at Powen? And then if you could link it to the state of charge thing, and then we're going to go deep, deep, deep on state of charge, because I know that's almost your mastermind subject.
Typically, the customers already have some sort of business case in mind when they come to us. It is something that we are doing now that we've invested more effort into our state of charge estimation, is trying to explain how much additional revenue might be expected, or maybe how much revenue you might be expected to lose if you have state of charge estimation errors. So how much additional revenue for a more accurate state of charge can you expect? That's some modeling that we are doing now to try to help get the word out. But typically, actually, the customer already has the business case in mind when they traditionally, at least when they've come to Powen, looking for a battery to buy.
And seeing as we're going to talk about state of charge so much, can you please define state of charge?
This is a pretty interesting question, because, you know, batteries are used in industries around the world, all sorts of different industries. Individual cell experts might have a different definition for what state of charge is than maybe someone in EV or in stationary storage. For us, we like to be as explicit as possible in estimating the energy available for discharge. So when we put a energy unit on our state of charge estimate, that should tell you if it's an estimate for discharge, exactly how much energy you can expect to discharge until you hit the bottom. Similarly, how much energy could you expect to charge if it's a state of headroom estimate? If you're talking about the percentage, state of charge as a percentage, generally my advice for customers is to try to use the energy estimates, if they can, in their optimization instead of a single percentage number. But the way we've defined the percentage now is the energy available for discharge as a percentage of the degraded energy capacity. So whatever the gas in the tank is divided by the gas that you're expected to be able to use in the tank divided by the size of the tank. That would be the percentage definition. Things get pretty obscure though, sure, when you start working in percentages. And that's why, again, why I would recommend, if possible, people use in their optimizations energy available for discharge or energy available for charge instead of a percentage.
Well, can you talk about that then? Why is a percentage an issue?
The analogy of the gas tank and the amount of gas in it, I think, is a good one in helping paint the picture. But based on conditions of the system itself, in particular, temperatures of the cells, maybe temperature imbalance, if there is any, or voltage imbalance within the cells, that means that the size of the tank can actually shrink or expand based on sort of the system state. And so when we give an energy number, that is our best estimate of the energy actually available for discharge. A percentage might be obscuring the fact that that size of the tank might be changing depending on the current conditions of the system.
So estimating state of charge has been a problem as long as time. I remember one of my first jobs while I was at university was to sell cell phones. And this is back in the good days when it was just, you know, the dumb phones and it was Nokias. I remember the Nokia N95, if anyone remembers that. That blew the market away. The reason why I bring this up is, even back then, everybody knew that once you'd had a phone for 6 months, by the time you got down to kind of 20% of state of charge on your screen, you knew that it was going to drain down to zero in about 10 minutes. And this was, you know, some of the best manufacturers in the world. And of course, there were different battery chemistries and whatnot. But this is a problem as old as time. I remember when the iPhone first came out, I'm pretty sure it didn't even have a percentage estimate. They just put that little green battery at the top. And I think it came out in, if I remember correctly, the second or third generation. It was an Apple feature that there was a percentage, demonstrating that it really is a dynamic problem and quite a difficult engineering problem to solve. To solve this quite a simple question, how much battery do I have in this thing?
Totally, yeah.
So let's start with, what does good look like? What does excellent state of charge measurement look like? And then how much of a problem is this for our industry? And what's it ending up costing us?
The gas tank analogy, I think, comes into play in explaining this, in that the amount of gas in your tank is really the amp hours that are stored within the cell. So this is to say the actual number of electrons that are available for discharge within the cells. So that's the actual amount of gas. How far you can drive on that gas is another estimation in itself. And so if state of charge estimation were perfect for utility scale operations, what we would have would be energy estimate that reflected the exact amount of energy that could be charged or discharged at, you can think of it maybe as a set of curves at different power settings. It gets to be pretty complicated when you think of all the different options there are as far as how you can drive the car. In terms of accuracy, I think that state of charge estimates that come in at 3% error or less are considered quite good. 10% maybe sort of an industry standard. We've heard lots of stories about state of charge errors at 20% being not uncommon. So it is certainly something, one of those things. This is sort of maybe the name of the game with large battery systems. They're more complicated than you would think, but the state of charge estimate is one of those things that, particular because people know, have so much experience with just that single estimate for their phone, they think that that translates to the whole battery system.
But why doesn't it then? Why is it not just as simple as a phone, which, despite my previous comments, I've got pretty good at estimating percentages.
Right.
So why is it not just a simple phone?
So this has to do with the fact that these battery energy storage systems are really not single batteries. They're collections of tens, hundreds of thousands, or maybe even multiple million batteries, individual cells at a site. And it's hard, or challenging, I guess I should say, to do state of charge estimation for one individual cell. That's part of the problem, especially for LFP, lithium iron phosphate cells, which we can talk about why. So there's the individual cell estimation problem, and then there's the aggregation problem. And when you aggregate these cells in series into a stack of batteries, you're only able to charge until your upper cell hits its upper limit, or discharge until your lower cell hits its lower limit. So there's some voltage balance issues that could be in play there. And then aggregating those stacks, which could be then in parallel behind single centralized inverters, each having its own temperature characteristics and performance characteristics, those central inverters then aggregating up to the site. Yeah, it becomes a many pieces to manage. That's a lot different than just, say, taking the straight sum of all the stored energies of the individual cells.
And you talked about LFP there. So this feels like the right time to ask you about different chemistries. And in the earlier days, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, NMC really dominated and still does in some high performance applications and some electric vehicles. But certainly with Chinese manufacturing, the needle has moved over to LFP, and LFP certainly dominates markets in the stationary storage world now for a ton of reasons. One of them is cost. Could you just talk about the difference between those two chemistries and measuring state of charge for them? You mentioned that LFP was more difficult to measure state of charge. And am I right to assume your reference there is it's more difficult than NMC? And in that situation, you know, why is that?
As a cell charges or discharges, the voltage, we can think it, once a cell is at rest, generally speaking, the more amp hours it has stored inside of it, the higher the voltage will be at the terminals.
So the more charge, in simple terms, the more charge in the battery, the higher the voltage you'd measure at the connection points.
Yeah, at the terminals. Yeah, exactly. And so if you think of that, there's a voltage on the bottom, that's the, say, the lower limit for the cell, and there's a voltage at the top, and we maybe say that's the upper limit. If the voltage curve, and what we call it, were straight between the upper and lower limits, then you could essentially look at the voltage itself and then just translate that voltage over to the state of charge for that cell.
So this is an important point, right? And it's not obvious. So there's no point on a battery, if you think about a AA battery from Duracell, there's no point on that battery that you measure the state of charge. So what you have to do is measure other attributes and then work backwards. So you're measuring the voltage across the terminals, and then you're inferring, you're translating with a bit like an exchange rate between currencies. You're translating that voltage into some other thing. And in this case, we're considering it to be how much energy is in a battery or state of charge. It's that translation that becomes difficult because, as you say, there's a moving exchange rate. So when the battery's got lots of power in it, the exchange rate is one way. You know, it might say one thing, and then as it loses power or loses charge, then the exchange rate moves, and that makes it very difficult to estimate in between, right?
That's part of it, that just the exchange rate itself can be difficult to pin down, especially if you're applying current. But the really tricky part is that, unfortunately, there's not a straight line between the lower and the upper voltages in terms of that voltage to state of charge curve. What happens, and it's even more so for LFP, is that, so you're starting from empty, you charge up initially, by the time you get to about 20%, all of a sudden the voltage becomes very flat between, say, 20 and maybe 90% of state of charge. So flat that it might be within the error of your voltage sensor, depending on how accurate your voltage sensors were. And then at the very top side, the curve takes another steep turn up to the top. So all of a sudden, if you are using this exchange rate or this voltage lookup program for estimating your state of charge, all of a sudden it becomes very uncertain or inaccurate if you're in the middle of that state of charge. And if you're using your system in a way, such as many frequency regulation applications have systems doing, where you stay in the middle for a long time, some errors can accumulate there.
And you could be creeping one way or the other without knowing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you stay in the middle for an extended period of time, errors can accumulate to those particularly high numbers we saw, or maybe even more. LFP has a very flat curve in the middle, like I described. NMC does not have as flat of a voltage curve. Some battery old timers told me that was actually one of the attractive reasons for using NMC in the first place, was that it was much easier to estimate the state of charge because voltage was such a better signal for understanding how many amp hours were stored within the cell.
So it's in the middle bit that the problems occur. And if you're using a lookup table or a program or some sort of exchange rate, however we want to call it, you really don't want flat bits, do you? You want a nice straight line, ideally, going up diagonally. So you can say a change in voltage equals a change in state of charge. So that's fascinating. I wonder why you did mention with LFP that the flat bit happens somewhere around 20% and somewhere beyond 90%. So I wonder why that is. That's not symmetrical around 50%.
Yeah, there is another step up, a small step that we see in the middle. I think it's around 70. All this is really the realm of chemical engineers. It is a little bit outside of my expertise to explain exactly what's happening within the chemical processes there, but that's what it is chemistry.
So there's two ways that this can catch you out, right? That when you need the power, it's not there. Or when you want to charge, you're actually coming up to your limit and you didn't realize. And so my intuition would be that really the biggest impact for you in making money in the markets is if you call your battery or you commit your battery and it can't provide the power and a high price and you have to make that up elsewhere, for example, or you get penalties or something. And so my gut feeling is that probably the thing that we're most scared about is overestimating state of charge. When you think you've got it, but you haven't, which sort of checks out. So how big of a problem is this? Now we've talked about it and how it works and where the problems are, how can asset owners do things smarter to make sure that they don't get caught out with this?
So yeah, we did just recently do a bit of a research project to try to quantify the financial impacts. In terms of what asset owners can do, I think the first step would be, if possible, try to understand how the state of charge algorithm works for the asset that you have. In most cases, there will be a recalibration, so to speak, that can happen if you charge the system all the way to full or discharge it all the way to empty, because the state of charge estimate becomes much more accurate when you're at the extremes. Regarding cell balancing, since the balance of the cells can have a big impact on the amount of energy that you can actually get out of the system, to follow whatever the maintenance guidelines that your hardware provider has given, or if you have an LTSA with them, like with Powin, manage that for you, and maintaining the equipment in general, including the thermal management systems, becomes very important for keeping the state of charge as accurate as possible.
Yeah, there's so many variables, aren't there? Because to start with, you have a cell that every single day is changing its electrochemical properties, its age, its calendaric degradation or aging over time, which is changing that voltage curve and reducing the available capacity. So you have just a ticking timer, clock that's going, which is changing the characteristics. And then you have your operational parameters, so running it in different duty cycles at different temperatures with different operating parameters. And then you have the measurement error to manage, which is in itself a compounding problem. And where, as you talk about, you know, what is your reference? The reference, the error in the reference is constantly moving around. So a really tricky problem to solve. And one of the things that you said that really blew me away was that 10% is considered standard, I think you said, right? 3% is good, 10% is standard. That feels really, really high, considering the capital expenditure that goes into these projects. That is just such a high number.
Totally. And I think what you see is a lot of operators, if they don't trust the state of charge estimate, then they essentially reduce, they put some sort of like haircut or some lower bound that they leave around the bottom of their energy capacity. Yeah, because they don't trust the estimate, and so they want to make sure they don't run out. That essentially reduces their effective operating capacity. And we came up with some estimate numbers for that in our research as well.
So can you talk about your research in more detail then? Let's jump into that.
Yeah, definitely. The question that we were trying to answer was, for each 1% increase in SOC estimation error, what is your expected reduction in market revenues? So that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to try to translate the SOC accuracy to what it means for actually making money in markets. We teamed up with the folks from Tierra Climate. I believe Emma Connett has been on your show before.
Yeah, friend of the podcast. We've done, we released a white paper with them. Terrific team.
Yeah, they were great to work with. So they work on the carbon policy side of things. And they also have market operations group where they have bidding optimization capabilities. And really what worked well for this project, a deep understanding of market rules in ERCOT, and in particular, how it is as you're going throughout your day, if you don't have the energy that you thought you did in your system, how that translates into either AS violation costs or base point deviation charges. All right, so how are we going to answer this question? For each 1% in SOC error, what's the expected reduction in revenues? Most people, when they do revenue simulations, they essentially assume 100% accurate SOC estimation. So they say, my battery's telling me that I have 100 megawatt hours stored right now. I'm going to discharge 10 megawatt hours, and that means that state of charge goes down 10. This essentially means you have 100% accurate state of charge estimation. What we did is we came up with, and we actually released a white paper that has all these details, but we came up with a way to model the error associated with SOC estimation. And the things that we wanted, the characteristics that we wanted to replicate there, were that as you get towards the edges, it becomes more accurate. The error can accumulate if you're in the middle range of the SOC. And then we wanted to have some knobs so we could turn it to, say, bias overestimate, bias underestimate, and then add some random noise in there. We set up this model within their market simulation framework. And so their optimization engine then only had access to this reported SOC number, the number that was the true SOC plus the error. And their optimization engine had to make its decisions based on what it thought the state of charge was instead of what it actually was. So we compared all of those runs with various amounts of SOC error to the perfect SOC runs. So the runs where we had a perfectly accurate state of charge. After we went back and then characterized the error for each run, we looked at how much revenue reduction there was. And we found that for arbitrage, so when we limited the market participation to being arbitrage only, that the reduction in revenue was about 0.8% for each 1% of SOC error. So that would mean if you had a 10% SOC error, that you could expect to make 8% less revenue from arbitrage, just based on how the individual days play out in those year-long simulations.
Interesting. I mean, it's comforting to know that the money you lose is less than the percentage. At least the exchange rate is somewhat in your favor.
Yeah. And if you want to get more comfortable with ancillary service heavy bidding strategies, you lose 0.2% for each 1% SOC error. So it's much less. The reduction in revenue is almost twice as bad for overestimating as it is for underestimating. But going back even to the 0.8% number, I mean, that 8% reduction in your arbitrage revenue, I mean, that could be a significant amount of money depending on, you know, what year and how big your system was.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's still worth sorting out one way or another.
Right.
So I know that there's some friends of the podcast, KP at Acure and Stefan and the team at Twace and some other folks are doing some really advanced stuff in battery cell analytics to try and solve this problem through modeling and software. And by all accounts, have had some pretty remarkable results. So what else is happening in this space to try and close this measurement error gap, which is evidently leading to loss of revenue and loss of therefore impact of battery assets in the system? Now, what can asset owners do, and what's the frontier of fixing this thing?
Just one more note on the results there. We did the revenue assessment. We also found that essentially for each 1% error, it's as if you have a 1.2% smaller battery. We call that the effective usable energy capacity of the system. So independent from revenue, because that was just an ERCOT, you can look at sort of the amount of the battery that you can expect to have access to. And so for each 1% SOC estimation error, decrease that effective usable capacity by 1.2%. In terms of what people are doing, I mean, Powen's angle here, since we have, it's always been at the heart of what we do, the data. So we have access to the data all the way to the cell level. That's been part of our design. That's part of our software and all of the historical data that we've had over all the years of our projects. So we are releasing soon our new state of charge estimation algorithm. And essentially it leverages this vast amount of historical data. We also are happy to work with Acure or companies like them to help customers get as comfortable as they want with their systems. But for us, it is an ongoing process, the state of charge estimation improvement, and in conjunction with the state of health estimation improvements. They're closely interlinked.
So Blake, now to our last two questions. You plugged your new system a little bit there, but here's your opportunity to sell Powin or anything special that's coming up or a world exclusive. You can announce it here. And then I'm going to ask you about your contrarian view. But firstly, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Sure. Well, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but I've been impressed with Powin, with the individual people I get to work with here. And the company has tenacity and heart in a way that is different from any other company I've been with. And so I guess I wanted to plug the company overall. But yes, we will be releasing soon our new state of charge estimation algorithm along with some other announcements surrounding it. So that and the white paper, which was released here around the end of March, that you can find on the company website, the economic value of SOC accuracy.
Okay, so we look forward to reading that one. And now to my favorite question, Blake. What is your contrarian view? So what's the thing that you believe that not a lot of other people believe?
I think that it's best to look at people in industry, in your industry, as collaborators instead of competitors whenever possible. So it's not all that earth-shaking, but it definitely makes things a bit more fun. Yeah, when we think about how it is that we can work together instead of beat each other up.
What a lovely end. Blake, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. We went very deep there into state of charge, and I think it was absolutely worth it. I'd love to get someone else on from Powin to talk about the story. 17 gigawatt hours installed or in construction. This is a company of real scale, and I'd love to talk to you guys about the supply chain, so if we can make that happen. And if you're listening to this and you want to read up more about Powin or some of the things that we talked about in this conversation, you can find links in the show notes. And with that, Blake, I say thank you and speak soon.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.